Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and Connor Newt here with you. Trevor Maddich will join us in about 15, 20 minutes for our weekly chat with one of our favorite football analysts. And we're going to start this hour on the local professional football team. Friend of the show, Nick Suss, wrote a story that published this morning with the headline, "What Should the Titans Do Next? Five outside-the-box off-season recommendations." All of them were very interesting. But there is one at the bottom that I found particularly interesting. And I am just going to read from Suss's story. I am really interested to hear what Derek Mason has to think about this. So one of the outside-the-box off-season recommendations, as suggested by Nick Suss of the Tennessean. Quote, "Do the A.J. Brown, Julio Jones thing again, but do it right." Quote, "There are only so many mouths that can be fed in the Titans receiver room. Bringing in a veteran like Tyreek Hill or Keenan Allen only makes sense if the Titans also try to trade receiver Calvin Ridley away, because no one of that caliber would be willing to come in to be a number four option. But Titans offensive coordinator Brian Daboll's history with free agent receiver Stephon Diggs is tantalizing, as are first-round pick Carnell Tate's similarities to Diggs. This could be another swing at the move the Titans pulled in 2021 by pairing an ascendant young receiver with a proven star he looks up to. In this scenario, trade Ridley to Washington, where he can reunite with former Titans teammates Van Jefferson, Treylon Burks, and Chigakonkwo, in exchange for a day three draft pick, and roll the dice on Diggs being a natural fit and a Daboll offense he's familiar with. Pair Diggs and Tate with Wandale Robinson and use the draft pick as a piece to be flexible with next spring." So Nick Suss suggesting dump Calvin Ridley, bring in Stephon Diggs. Derek Mason, your thoughts.
This would be the wide receiver translator.
Yeah, it would be. I don't – listen, there's nothing – Diggs 2-3 years ago, yes. Even Diggs 2 years ago, yes. But I think what Nick is missing here is the rapport that Cam has already built with Calvin Ridley. He was sort of the go-to guy. He was the guy before Calvin got injured. He was the guy Calvin he was looking for Calvin just about every time. Now, when he got hurt, it was something different. He had to get reacclimated once he got back. But Calvin fits better in the role that he's in. I'm not sure a Stephon Diggs fits in the role that they would want him to play here, because ultimately you are playing second fiddle to Carnell Tate, and at times you're going to play it to Wandale Robinson because of, you know, Wandale knowing the offense and you know, Cam looking for him, because a lot of times that's the easiest throw the shortest throw is the easiest throw at times. So bringing in a Stephon Diggs, I just think that will set him back, because not only now he has to get used to three new receivers, all three of his starters would be guys that he is not used to throwing a football to. And what do you want your second-year quarterback to be comfortable in an offense and throwing to guys that he's gotten used to throwing to? He's gotten used to throwing to Calvin Ridley. He's going to get used to throwing to Carnell Tate as well as Wandale Robinson. But you can't have his whole starting unit be new faces out there. They've tried that before, and it didn't work.
Now, Calvin Ridley, Willie, and Stephon Diggs are roughly the same age. They're in their early 30s. I believe Ridley is 31, Diggs is 32. We know Ridley is coming off of a major injury. Diggs had a productive season last year in New England. 85 receptions, 1,013 receiving yards, and 4 touchdowns. So if you're just looking at what did you do last season, the answer simply should be, yeah, Stephon Diggs over Calvin Ridley. But I do hear Derek's point that Cam Ward had started developing a rapport with Calvin Ridley, and he would have to start from scratch with yet another receiver – on top of Carnell Tate and Wandale Robinson. I get that point from Derek. I hadn't thought about that. That's why he's the wide receiver. But what do you think, Willie?
It's a intriguing one. Diggs has always been that fiery guy that believes he's the best. This is your greatest strength, maybe your greatest weakness, especially when you get to this stage of your career and you're not quite what you were 5 years ago. I still wonder what he would be like as a guy saying, hey, you know, we got this Carnell Tate. We're really happy about him. We got Wandale Robinson. And, Stephon, we want you to come in here and just be that complimentary third, fourth guy. We got these young guys we're building around. You'd be a great – I don't know if he's like that. Like, I always remember Jerry Rice when he was, like, 58 years old still saying, I'm the number one guy. I still can go out there and play. Like, even when he was
– In Seattle.
Looking around, in Seattle, like, looking for a team to play for. Like, I'm still the man. Like, that belief is valuable. But could Diggs be that guy? I don't know. Not that Ridley's a flawed player for sure. It's crazy to think that they're a year apart in age, because it just seems like Diggs has been around a lot longer because he arrived earlier.
Yes, Calvin Ridley is 31. He'll be 32 in December, and Diggs is 32. He'll be 33 in November.
Yeah, so again, it's not so much for me the age. It's about making the quarterback comfortable in his settings, in his surroundings. Again, he's built a rapport with Calvin Ridley. He's built it with Elliott and DK. Now he's trying to build it with Wandale and Carnell Tate, and to add someone else in there. And listen, I'm sure that bringing, you know, Diggs in, it wouldn't alter the locker room in any way, I believe. But I do believe in this also, and Willie mentioned it. He's basically been the number one guy for a very long time. And when he felt he started segueing out of that number one, he wanted a trade.
Right.
He did it in Minnesota. He's done it in other places where he's like,
Buffalo.
Yeah. I got to go. And that's, again, there's nothing wrong with it because he's been productive.
He made a pit stop in Houston but got hurt.
Exactly.
If memory serves.
Absolutely. So it's not like, you know, he's not, he is productive. But I know guys of that ilk. It's like Willie just said, I don't care if I'm 40 years old. If I'm still out there, I still believe I'm the best guy. And sometimes that may not, when you're not getting targeted, it may alter, you know, during the season. You may end up trading them in the middle of the season because it's altering what you want as a locker room, or it's altering, you know, the quarterback in his read process, because he's trying to get it to this veteran guy because he respects him so much. So he's trying to get it to him where he may be going a little bit outside of the offense.
I also think that Diggs is used to playing on contending teams. He's played on a lot of winning teams. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he's a guy that's just going to come in and say, yeah, I can really help these young receivers and this young quarterback. I think if I'm him, I'm looking to go somewhere where I can
win
one
now.
Last kick at the can for the Super Bowl. I still look at the Titans roster as not a Diggs away from winning. I'm still in the developmental stage. And I don't know how Calvin Ridley is going to take to whatever role he's got, because his role is going to change. Going into last year, it was like, okay, here's the guy they spent all the money on. He's clearly supposed to be the number one guy. And so you go from there. And now he's a big, big question mark. He's trying to resurrect his career. He's trying to prove he still belongs in the league. That's a different thing than where Diggs is.
I think he will be more inclined to accept the role for this reason. He took a pay cut to stay there.
Yes. Because it was that or hit the street and try to find a new place.
He knew that the best thing for him in his career was to stay where they enjoy him being here. He's a good teammate. He's been the mentor to these younger receivers, and he's built a rapport with the quarterback. And frankly, he probably wasn't going to get that with the Titans, you know, end up re-signing him to or restructuring. He probably was not going to get that in the open market.
Jackson says, to be fair, the Patriots weren't expected to contend last year, and Diggs signed there.
But Diggs was the number one guy. He was the number one guy. Him coming in, they knew he was the number one guy.
That's true.
He caught 85 out of 102 targets last year.
He's still productive now.
It's pretty good. You know, not earth-shattering, but solid.
615-737-1025. Nick Sust of the Tennessean. One of his outside-the-box suggestions for the Titans this offseason. Dump Calvin Ridley. Bring in Stephon Diggs. Your thoughts. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Trevor Maddich will join the program. I'm curious to hear what he has to say about the latest in the Brendan Sorsby story. We'll also talk to Trevor about Jeffrey Simmons and his new deal. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Trevor Maddich will join us momentarily. One texter commenting on our previous segment said, well, that idea from Nick was just plain stupid, so what were his other ideas? First of all, Nick Suss, not stupid.
No.
Sharp
no,
as attack.
It very sharp.
Yes, but here...
Can we say one thing, just a quick update before we get to the other four?
Yes.
This is the kind of World Cup story that you like, Adam.
Off the wall?
A little bit off the wall. Yeah. We got England and Ghana playing right now. Of course, any game, any match with England is worth watching because the fans are crazy. And there's all this, you know, is England finally going to win again? They would be a little bit like the Knicks, right? They haven't won in a long time. They have great fans. They're playing Ghana. There was a situation in the first half where two guys jump up and they bonk heads. One guy for England, one guy for Ghana. They go down. Of course, they act like they're, you know, never going to ever play again for a second. The medics come out there. It was a classic. The England guy gets up and shakes it off, and he's okay. The Ghana guy, they decide to wrap his head in gauze for a head bonk. Now, Adam, you as a father of two youngsters, your son is four. He would be at the prime age of this. You've had the kid that says, Dad, my finger hurts. And you know what they're doing. They're not really hurt, but they just want a Band-Aid.
Yes, especially if it's a Paw Patrol Band-Aid.
Oh, yeah. And so you get that, and magically, you feel better. So this guy has been running around with a bandage on his head that looks absolutely ridiculous. He looks like the mummy. There didn't look like a cut or anything. It didn't look like he was bleeding.
No.
He just hit the back of his head, and he's been fine ever since. And so there's all these hilarious commentaries going on the social media, such as, hey, it looks like the NFL needs to look at this. This is a magical cure for concussions. Just wrap the guy's head up with gauze. Everything's fine. But by the way, it's 0-0, almost 60 minutes in. This would be a pretty big situation if England does not win.
Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Trevor Maddich. Hello, Trevor. How are you?
Great, Adam. How are you doing?
We are doing well. Thank you so much for asking. So, speaking of the World Cup, you and I were exchanging messages earlier today. You're enjoying the World Cup like the rest of us, and you made an interesting parallel between how the U.S. men's national team is playing and how the Tennessee Titans defensive line will play under Robert Saleh. I thought you should expand on that theory.
Yeah, I love the way the men's soccer team is playing this year. In the past, they've been too passive and were too affected when something bad happened, especially early. Someone scored a goal on them to go up 1-0, and our men's team would clutch their pearls and be all worried and be all cautious. Our women's team, on the other hand, you do something to them early, and you're in trouble because they're going to smash you in the mouth. They're going to come back and just go downhill at you. And the men now are playing like that. And what it made me think of is the new style of the defensive line for the Titans under Robert Saleh. Rather than catch blockers and eat them up so the linebackers can run around and make plays, the defensive line is going to get upfield. They're going to attack. They're going to create chaos and have the linebackers just clean up behind it. And that's one of the reasons that they wanted to lock in Jeffrey Simmons, made him the highest paid defensive tackle in the NFL. I mean, last year, Simmons had personal bests in sacks, quarterback hits, tackles for loss, with an offense that didn't give him a whole lot of late leads where he could just really tee off. Well, this new style is right up his alley, and a lot of the new players that the Titans brought in via trade, free agency, and even the draft, these are guys that excel at going forward. I mean, Femi Oladejo excels going forward. He's struggling to learn the rest of it, but going forward hard is what is what he excels at. And so that's what made me think of that. I mean, in the USA match against Australia, the first goal happened because of aggressive attacking, breaking down the defense. And Balogun took the ball on the left wing, kind of closer to the goal, not way out wide. But the ball was pressed down the field so fast, so hard, and Balogun got so deep so quickly with his penetration that the defenders of Australia had to face their own goal and sprint towards their own goal in order to get into position. And Balogun fed the ball in on a crosser, and it wasn't a nuanced, subtle, accurate. No. He fired that ball in there, and it was accurate all right, but he hit it so hard that it ran into the legs of an Australian defender facing his own goal, running like crazy to try to catch up with Balogun on the wing, and it bounced off of the Australian defender into his own goal. And that happened because of aggressive attacking, creating chaos with the defense. And that's exactly what the Tennessee Titans are going to want to do with their defensive line in this new Robert Saleh style.
Speaking of Robert Saleh and his style, Trevor, last week we were talking about Saleh's plan for his pass rushers. He is going to try to limit the amount of snaps that they are on the field, specifically Jeffrey Simmons. Now, Saleh has been doing this throughout his NFL coaching career, so it's not something that he's implementing here for the first time. But I am curious for your opinion on how well you think that can work specifically for Jeffrey Simmons, because I went back and looked. Quinnen Williams, I believe it was in 2022, when Williams played for Saleh in New York, he played under 70% of the defensive snaps. He still had 12 sacks and was a first-team All-Pro. Jeffrey Simmons has been in the 80s in terms of the defensive play time rate. So how do you think it's going to work with Jeffrey Simmons looking to have a significant decrease in the number of snaps he's on the field?
I think it'll make Jeffrey Simmons even more effective when he is out there, because he won't get worn down so much. And later in the game, and especially later in the games, later in the season when it really matters, he will have fresher legs. And think of it like a hockey line. You know, everybody goes out there and they go so hard, so fast, that it's impossible that hockey line could maintain the entire game at that pace. But then they come off and the next line goes on. And that's exactly what the Titans' defensive line is going to be expected to do, and that includes Jeffrey Simmons. I mean, there are a whole bunch of guys that individually are not nearly as good as Simmons. But because their skill, their biggest skill, is getting upfield, like John Franklin Myers that they got from the Broncos and Jermaine Johnson that they got from the Jets, these are guys that don't need to be as good as Simmons. They need to be fresh. They need to be aggressive. And just like Balogun's run against Australia, they need to be so far upfield that it breaks everything down. But to do that, you've got to be fresh. And so I like it that they're doing this for Jeffrey Simmons. It'll also extend his career if they're able to re-sign him after this extension, which I don't see why they wouldn't be able to. And overall, you know, what you're looking for is not how many minutes can a guy play. You're looking for how many plays can a guy make in the minutes that he plays. And so I think this is the smart thing to do.
Now, Trevor, the Titans have a lot of question marks on their roster. And we will not; those will not be answered until actually the season starts going. But what are your concern levels with two individuals in particular? J.C. Latham, who dealt with some hip issues last year, kind of signed out for a minute, didn't get the start that he needed. And I don't think he really ever came into form. He started playing better, but I don't think we've seen the best of J.C. And then Femi Oladejo, another guy that was sidelined, I think, in week 6 or 7 of last year because of an injury. What's your concern level on those two guys coming into the season?
You know what, Derek, I'm not really worried about J.C. Latham. Mm-hmm. You know, for him, it's the health. He's got to stay healthy. But he lost weight, and I think that will help him to stay healthy. But his skill set coming out of Alabama, I think, translates exceptionally well to the NFL, especially at right tackle. And, you know, he's very quick. His problem at Alabama, pass setting at right tackle, wasn't that he wasn't quick enough to stay in front of those edge rushers out wide. It's that he would overset. I mean, he would be too quick. And that's the kind of thing that could be coached into a better situation. And so I think he's got everything that he needs to be one of the top 10 and eventually probably top 7 or so right tackles in the NFL. He's not there yet. But as long as he stays healthy, I'm not worried about him. Hips are a problem. So we'll have to monitor that and see how that is. With Femi, I'm actually really excited about him. Mm-hmm. Because at UCLA, he was an off-ball linebacker. Then his last year there, he was more of an edge rusher than he had ever been before. He showed a huge motor. He showed a lot of explosiveness. But he didn't show a lot of instincts because he didn't have time to build them up. So then he comes into the NFL, and it's a very nuanced position to be on the edge because so many things can happen to you out there, and you got to be ready to react to all of them and not just think about it for too long. Well, in this system, at least in the beginning, he won't be asked to process all that information, to process all that nuance. He'll be asked to get upfield, disrupt, and just break things. You know, just line up on a wide 9 position, so he's lined up wide on the edge most of the time, and then get upfield and create havoc. And the rest of the team will clean up behind him. And so I am cautiously optimistic mm-hmm. that in that narrow role, Femi can be he can punch above his weight and have more actual effectiveness than he would have if he was asked to do everything all at once, like he was when he first came into the league.
Now, a friend of the show, Nick Suss, wrote an article in the Tennessean entitled, "What Should the Titans Do Next? 5 Outside-the-Box Offseason Recommendations." And one of them was swapping out Calvin Ridley for Stephon Diggs. Do you think that would be a good move for the Tennessee Titans?
I don't, Derek. It's nothing against Diggs. I mean, mm-hmm. he's a very talented guy. But you're looking at locker room chemistry that's already been developed between Ridley and Cam Ward, a quarterback. You know, Ridley is the kind of a guy that when he's healthy and when he's playing well and when he's not trying to do too much, then he can be a number one receiver, or at least a number one caliber receiver. I think last year he tried to do too much, dropped a bunch of passes. But I think now with Tate and Robinson on the receiving corps, I think that he's going to be able to settle into a role where he won't have to think that he has to carry all of the load himself. And I think the rapport that he's already built up with Ward is important. We've talked for years about how, well, a couple of years now, about how this team needs to be focused on the development of Cam Ward at quarterback. Because if he develops into the number one guy, they can build everything around him. If he's not that guy, they need to know it. And building a receiving core around him is one of the things that needs to happen in order for him to have a chance to prove that. And having a guy that he's already got a year under his belt with Calvin Ridley, I think is an investment that you'd have to really think twice before you'd abandon that.
Trevor Maddux is with us. We're talking football with him. Trevor, let's go back to our old friend that's keeping us busy over the summer, Brandon Sorsby. Were you surprised that the NFL decided not to allow him into the supplemental draft?
Not really, because when you look at the NFL, their big priority is to protect the shield, protect the reputation of the league itself, right? And when you look at gambling issues, in the past, gambling among players has always been bad for business. And that's the last thing you want to be if you want an NFL career is to be bad for business. But now that the NFL is in business with gambling entities, with legal gambling organizations, there's an even greater sensitivity to the possibility that a player might be influencing the outcome of games or outcome of player stats. Because now it's not just the reputation of the NFL, it is the pocketbook of the NFL. And if they lose credibility to some degree that costs them customers to their partners, it costs the NFL money. And so I think that this is exactly the wrong time for a guy like Sorsby, who's got long-term gambling issues, including gambling on his own team, to have to overcome with the league. And in not having the supplemental draft, the league actually protected the 32 teams from lawsuits. Because if they did have the draft and nobody picked him and Sorsby sued alleging collusion, all he would need in discovery is for some league executive to have had a text message where he said, look, nobody should draft Sorsby because XYZ. Well, that might be evidence of collusion, and it will give the NFL all kinds of trouble. By the league stepping in and not having the supplemental draft, it took away any possibility of any embarrassments happening in discovery. And as we know now, the attorneys for Brendan Sorsby have said that they are going to take legal action against the NFL. So This all adds up to the NFL did the right thing, and they had to protect themselves, especially in this new age of legal gambling.
That makes a lot of sense, because I was thinking, why not just see if anybody wants to pick them? If they do, then you can suspend them, and then you give them a pathway back into the league. So, Trevor, should the NFL offer him an explanation and say, if you can do the following things, then we will consider your desire to be in our league, or whatever, however you want to put it? How long would that period be? Don't you have to give him some way to work his way back?
Well, he kind of sort of does, because he can still apply for the 2027 draft. And, you know, the NFL, if they start to give him ways that he can qualify for the 2027 draft, and then the league is just not satisfied with how he does, it opens it up to even more lawsuits. He could say, I was told to do this, and I did this, and the NFL said no anyway, and here comes a lawsuit. And so I think what the NFL is saying is that it's up to Sorsby to satisfy them. The supplemental draft is discretionary. It's not a requirement for the NFL to have. And just because Sorsby applied for it doesn't mean the NFL is triggered to have it. And in the letter to Sorsby that was leaked, explaining why they aren't having the supplemental draft, part of what they said included that the application came in just a few days before the deadline, and it did not include a whole bunch of information from the NCAA's investigation of Sorsby, the things that Sorsby had admitted to, a whole bunch of things that Sorsby tried to do to mitigate it, like we have, and all the rest of the stuff that he tried to do. The NFL said in that letter that a lot of that information wasn't there yet, and that they didn't have time to vet Sorsby properly to have the supplemental draft. And so instead of saying, here's what you have to do, Sorsby, do this, this, and this, and then we'll consider it, what the NFL said was, we don't have information about this, that, and that, therefore we can't make a decision. That puts all of the onus back onto Sorsby and his representatives, and it does not open up the NFL for a lawsuit, at least not a successful one, I don't think.
Trevor Mathich has been our guest on D-Mace Vinganadonic. He joins us every Tuesday. Trevor, as always, a pleasure. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks, guys.
615-737-1025. We'll react to what Trevor had to say. Some major trades happening in the NHL. None involving the Predators. Otherwise, we would tell you right now.
Dang it.
But we'll discuss that. The NBA draft is tonight, and there was a seismic trade in the NBA overnight. We'll discuss all of that as much as we can fit into the next segment coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Joey from Bellevue.
Yes.
With some breaking news on our text line. The Twin Peaks in Cool Springs has permanently closed.
Did they say why? We used to do the show from there. The Sunday Show.
Yeah. According to Williamson's source, a sign posted on the door reads, "This location has been closed."
Wow.
Oh, man. Good times. Wow. Good times at the Twin Peaks in Cool Springs.
We had to go there. Yeah, we had to go there a few times.
I did. I did the show from there with the one and only Chris Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
R.I.P.
Twin Peaks.
Cool Springs, Twin Peaks.
Is that the only one closing?
I don't know. Yeah. I didn't frequent Twin Peaks.
Yeah, I wasn't a frequent Twin Peaker.
Generally speaking. Willie, any thoughts on Twin Peaks and Cool Springs closing?
I don't think Willie ever been there, had you?
My favorite Twin Peaks story is one of the many travel tournaments I traveled with one or both of my kids. In this case, it was Mahoney. Mm-hmm. It was in Atlanta. We stayed in a hotel.
Did he learn to become a man at Twin Peaks?
Well, you know, it was funny. We were just looking for something to eat after a game. And we're like, what's around our hotel? You know, hey, we went to this place last night. I didn't know anything about Twin Peaks.
Thank you, Connor.
So we come rolling into Twin Peaks. Like, hey, okay, you know, it's late. We just played. Just get
something
to eat.
How old are the kids?
So Mahoney at this stage, I think, is like 14, 13.
That's the prime. That's the prime age.
And we walked in there like, whoa. What have we walked in on?
Oh my goodness, man.
Well,
oh, man.
Okay. So rest in peace.
Yes.
Rest in peace.
Moving on. There are still many fabulous Twin Peaks locations, but the one in Cool Springs has been closed, according to Joey from Bellevue. A lot of action happening in the NHL during the show. There was just a huge trade within the past 10-15 minutes involving the St. Louis Blues and the Washington Capitals. The Blues trading Jordan Kyrou to the Capitals for a package that includes the number 16 pick in the first round of the draft. On Friday, the San Jose Sharks and Ottawa Senators also made a trade today involving the 9th overall pick in the NHL draft. So you might want to be watching and tuning in to this program over the next couple of days, because the NHL trade activity is firing on all cylinders.
And on one hand, you're like, save some of this action for draft night because you love the drama during the draft. Another one that's significant in my mind, not quite as headliner, but remember yesterday we had a really good guest talking.
Rachel Kryshak of ESPN.com.
I thought she was outstanding. You can go back and listen to it.
Yes.
All of our interviews and shows you can go find on our podcast. But you asked her about that mid-20s player that might be available for a trade. Well, one of them that she mentioned actually got traded today.
Simone Nemitz.
He's
defenseman he was on the New Jersey Devils.
Right.
He's now on the Calgary Flames. He was the second
overall pick.
Overall pick, what, 4 years ago? Three, 4 years ago?
Yeah. And they thought he had a quick rise to the NHL. They thought he was going to be a top pair defenseman for years and years in New Jersey. He's traded. So he's going to get a new start, but it took quite a bit for Calgary to get him. But, you know, we listed off, or Rachel did, four or five of those players who are maybe a little mixed up, not quite fitting with the team that drafted them, and therefore they're kind of floating them around in trades. I think looking at the return of what it took to get Nemitz would be an interesting thing to file away just
two
in case.
Two first-round picks and a second-round pick involved in the package for Nemitz. So
New Jersey got two first-round picks?
2027 first from Vegas, a 2028 first from Colorado. So two late first-round picks and a second-round pick in 2026 from the Rangers.
All for Nemitz?
Yes. As part of a bigger package. Yeah.
So if there's a guy, like if it's Mason McTavish or if it's Matvei Mishkov.
If you're a Predators fan hoping that the team acquires one of those mid-20-something players who needs a change of scenery, you might need to be prepared to pay up.
Right. Would you feel good if that's the thing? The Predators trade a couple of future first-round picks to get a guy like that? Seems like a pretty decent-sized gamble to do that. But at the same time, Nemitz still could hit another level, and he could be a great player. It hasn't happened yet.
This is indicative of what the draft is going to look like, a bunch of trades?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Especially considering there are not a lot of unrestricted free agents mm-hmm. that are going to be sought after. So if you want to really make
– you got to make trades.
If you want an impact player like a Jordan Kyrou or like some other guys who have been dealt here, obviously Brady Tkachuk, it's going to have to be via the trade.
Mm. One texter says, what was the package that Florida gave for Tkachuk? That was 3 first-round picks and I believe a 2nd-round pick for Brady
Tkachuk.
Yes.
3 firsts and a 2nd.
3 firsts and a 2nd. So it's something. And speaking of major trades, I woke up this morning and discovered what just happened.
Wow. England had a prime opportunity to score a goal.
Can we quickly talk about the chance Ghana had?
Oh, they had 2 chances, England, and just blew it.
It hit the cross. They had a header that hit the crossbar, the follow-up by Harry Kane, their great player. He kicked what looked like a field goal at Gillette Stadium that could have been made by Adam Vinatieri. Man. He missed it so bad. It would have gone through the uprights if they were up in the field. But England has not been able to find a way to score. Ghana is, I don't know, 10 or so minutes away from a 0-0 tie, which is what they entered the game. Ghana is dressed like a school bus, kind of the same colors as a school bus, and mm-hmm. it's fitting the term in soccer is you back up the bus.
And
just play defense, just try not to let the other team score, play for the tie. That's kind of what they're doing.
There was a seismic trade in the NBA overnight. I did not see it until I woke up this morning. The Milwaukee Bucks finally traded Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's going to the Miami Heat. And here's what I love about NBA trades. We're talking about NHL trades and all of these picks flying around. NBA trades always make me laugh.
I never understand
because
them.
Of just how much is involved. So the Bucks traded Giannis Antetokounmpo and Bobby Portis to the Miami Heat for a package headlined by Tyler Hero, but 4 players total in the trade, plus 3 first-round picks, 1 pick swap, and 1 second-round pick. The Heat are sending to Milwaukee unprotected first-rounders in 2031 and 2033. Stop.
2033?
So the player, the player who the Bucks could draft in the first round of 2033.
How old is he?
Does he have hair on his chest yet?
No.
Is he coming in from recess right now?
Probably
like, how old is this? Like, that's what I love about the NBA. They're like, here, we'll give you this second rounder in 2067. Like, it is very funny.
It never, for a guy as great and unique as Giannis, mm-hmm. it just doesn't ever seem to the other team to get, like, the Bucks. Tyler Hero is a really good player. So, yes. By the way, Connor, another Kentucky guy for you. Any thoughts on Tyler Hero?
Happy for him. He gets a fresh start. He gets to go home. He's from Wisconsin, so happy for him.
Oh, okay.
Good for him.
Insight.
The Bucks are going to stink.
Poor Bucks.
They're going to stink out.
The era's over. They got the ring though. Yeah. They got the one ring.
That's all that really matters.
And what was
I guess.
The what was the thing they called where they were all watching the game?
The deer.
Was it the deer park or like what was the area where they all watched the game? It was definitely Fear the Deer. I forget if they had a name for it.
I don't know.
I don't remember that one. I remember.
The Deer District?
They got the championship, though.
The Deer District?
The Deer District, yeah.
Well, they got their championship.
Fear the Deer. So the NBA draft starts tonight. We'll talk about that. We'll see where Nate Ament and Tyler Nickel could go in the NBA draft. I believe the NBA draft is now being split over 2 nights, which is strange. I don't love that. What I used to love about the NBA draft was you could sit down and watch the whole thing in just a couple of hours, as opposed to the NFL draft, which takes like 4 days. But we'll get into the NBA draft in the final hour. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, last week on the program, we had Nick Baumgartner of The Athletic, and he wrote a film study about Cam Ward. And when we had him on the show to discuss it, he brought up a name who came to mind as he was watching Cam Ward's film. And I'm wondering how we feel about that comparison. And we'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
That was just awesome. So I was shots.
I would have read this text, but Chase told me. I don't know if Chase...
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe,
Rechalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.